This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Homelessness in Missouri is on the rise. Between 2023 and 2024, the number of homeless Missourians increased by almost 10%. That's according to figures from the Department of Housing and Urban Development, which conducts an annual point-in-time count of people across the U.S. who are experiencing unstable, insecure housing. The most recent point-in-time count took place in late January. Kayvon Mansouri, investigative reporter for the Midwest Newsroom, got bundled up to see firsthand what the count involves. And he joins us now to talk about it and the story he wrote that examines why an accurate count is so challenging and important. Kayvon, great to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me.
We also have April Redman. April leads Callaway Cares, Callaway Cares, a Fulton-based nonprofit that serves homeless people in Callaway and Cole counties. She's also the regional coordinator for the Missouri Balanced State of Continuum Care. April, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Hello.
And last but not least, we have Adam Pearson, director for the St. Louis Department of Human Services. Adam, welcome to you too.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about the count itself. As I noted in the introduction, that happened in January. It was very cold. But let's talk about what a point-in-time count entails. April, can you give us a bit of a primer on that?
I mean, it is quite literally like its title says, point-in-time count. We're trying to really gather as much data as we possibly can on those who are unsheltered the night of that count each year. Mm-hmm. So it quite literally is, we are surveying them in real time that night.
And Kayvon, for you, this, I take it, was your first time being out. Was there anything about the process that came as maybe not necessarily a surprise, but an illumination of what you had just read about and you saw, like, in person?
Yeah, absolutely. In the lead up to the reporting, I had read a lot about point-in-time counts, but it didn't really quite hit me until I met April and sort of got in the back of her SUV and tagged along. You know, it was a pretty cold night, but a warmer night than expected, as April said. But it was surprising to see how challenging it is, especially in rural areas, to find individuals that sometimes, you know, volunteers like April know that they have been there in the past, but the challenge of actually finding them on that night. And just everything that goes into it, you know, whether it be going, you know, walking through woods, going through abandoned buildings, sliding down very icy roads after a blizzard, which I'm sure April remembers. You know, it was just a very interesting evening of the, seeing the hurdles as well as some of the successes that come from the count.
Mm-hmm. And how many hours are we talking about, April, where you're spending time at one point doing this count?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of prep work that goes into it beforehand. We actually meet once a month, every single month throughout the year, to talk about whether the next one's coming up or what we just went over for the previous ones. The night of, it takes, we do the survey from 5 p.m. to 7 a.m. the next morning. And then the entire following week after that, we do what is called a service-based count, where anybody we come in contact with to have services with, we ask them if they were unsheltered on that night, and then we count them as part of the service-based count, which then does reflect in the overall point-in-time count numbers after that. Mm-hmm. So basically, we're trying to track how many people are unsheltered on that night, whether we see them or not, during that night, during the service-based count afterwards. Mm-hmm. But we try to get as many of them as we possibly can the night of, between 5 and 7 a.m.
And Adam, here in the city, is that the same process that you all are going through?
You know, it's a similar process. I was really happy to hear April describe what they do at the Balance of State, because I think that in the past, what it had been was, you know, a simple once, you know, a one-time count. But I think that a lot of COCs and service providers are finding that taking the count over a period of days is a bit more effective and gives you a better understanding of who's out there and who hasn't been counted just on the first night. And so with the city, it's a similar process. As April mentioned, there's quite a bit of training and preparation needed for the point in time. For us, we started on January 22nd. On into January 23rd. Many of our volunteers started at 6:30 in the morning in counting folks and making sure that we had different zones in the community that we went to. There were 13 different zones. And so for us, those were the two primary days for the count. And then afterwards, there were four different sort of community events where we met with folks in the community to just talk through if they needed services, if they were unhoused, and that sort of helped us to expand the accuracy of the count.
So there are obviously some differences then between doing the count in a rural area and an urban area. What about the suburbs? Are there particular challenges that exist around accounting for folks who are maybe in unstable housing situations that are not as visible, Adam?
Yeah, well, what I would say is, you know, for the city of St. Louis, we have 60 square miles to cover. And so for us, it is a fairly confined space. But if you're talking about a suburb or a county that is a bit larger, there might be a bit more coordination, perhaps some expanded teams that go out. Maybe there are more zones that they would have to cover, simply more geography. Mm-hmm. And potentially more disparate spaces where people could gather, whether it is in abandoned housing or in the woods or different parks, under bridges, things like that. And so I imagine that it could be a little bit more difficult in a larger county than a more densely, you know, impacted space such as a city.
Mm-hmm. April, give us a sense of how much ground you and others who are participating in this point in time count, how much ground do you have to cover?
Well, in all seriousness, since we cover the majority of the state with the balance of state, there's 102 counties under the balance of state. So that's really what we're trying to cover, and literally every inch of that. And so, and he's correct, when you're talking about more rural or even smaller towns around your larger cities, it's harder to find those who are homeless because there's not the dense population that is there to see it every day. When you have less people to acknowledge the problem, there's less people that know about it in general, and people can hide very easily, especially in the woods, or on gravel roads. Even we've had whole compounds of homeless folk that are living off of the elements on gravel roads all throughout different counties. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it just depends on who their neighbors are, or if anybody wants to give that information out to an organization like this, because there are fear factors that also are involved in that, and people don't want anyone to know where they are located, because most generally they're squatting on somebody's land regardless of where they're at. So they don't want to get caught and then be booted out and have all their things thrown in dumpsters, because that's what happens a lot of the time. When MoDOT gets called to clear out a camp, they don't always get to know ahead of time. So it's a kind of a touchy subject, especially in the rural areas, because when they do find them, they usually act on it pretty quickly. So they've gotten to where they can hide very well. So that really brings us back to an outreach effort. And without the outreach effort, we can't figure out where these folks are. So that's something that we've really been pushing for the last couple of years, is getting more volunteers and more smaller organizations and church groups and such to help us with this, because they're the ones who know who is closest to them. And we need that feedback. And it takes all year working with people sometimes to build that trust, where they will speak with you on the night of, or so you can even know where they're at. So like this year, we had already had some we'd already had feedback from folks as to where they were. And so we knew where to look because we'd already been working with a lot of these folks throughout the year with our mobile soup kitchen and with our outreach efforts that we have in other counties already. So mm-hmm. that's always very helpful. But we look at it more along the lines of an all-year thing that gets up and gets ready for the point in time count in January, because we need to work with them to find services throughout the year anyways.
Right.
So we really try to work with them throughout the year.
And I think one term that has already come up a couple times is COC, mm-hmm. and that is continuum of care. So before we go any further, I'd like to get some background on that. Adam, what is COC, and how is it that people should understand what it is, given maybe what assumptions are about the things that are provided service-wise to those who are experiencing homelessness?
Absolutely. Excellent question. And so the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development prescribes the need for a continuum of care for each community that receives HUD funding. And what a COC is a consortium of homeless services agencies and individuals and organizations that are generally interested in the unhoused population. And this is a group of people who get together on a regular basis, who talk through coordinating activities, coordinating services. There's some conversation around planning and development for some of these organizations and nonprofits who want to expand services. And so questions come up such as, how much emergency shelter do we need? How much permanent supportive housing, rapid rehousing, supportive services? And one of the roles of the COC is to bring all of these groups together to talk through what a system, what a functioning system could look like, and how we can end homelessness locally. Mm-hmm. And so one of the goals of a COC is to bring as many services as possible to bear, and to also leverage the financial assistance that the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development can give these communities. And so each COC has an allocation of funding that they can receive from HUD. And, you know, the role of the COC is to then think through how we can distribute that funding and make sure it gets to the right locations so that we can bring as many people as possible inside.
So, Kayvon, I want to come back to you, because the point of the piece that you wrote is really to get at the count and how there's an undercount, mm-hmm. and there is an increasing number of people who are experiencing homelessness, not only in Missouri, but across the Midwest. So what are the consequences then if the count is off?
Yeah, so, you know, it's a matter of funding and services. Basically, as we've kind of covered, the point in time count is a way to tell HUD where there's need. So when the information from the point in time count goes to HUD, they make a decision and funding is dispersed. So when there are undercounts, that can have an effect on who's getting services. And that is actually something that has been widely criticized, that HUD, it falls on HUD. So there's been many studies over time that basically says that HUD's way of doing the point in time count is it's not the best way to do it. There are better ways. And that basically, because there's not really a through line of what, you know, of rules, mm-hmm. that can kind of, that's why these sort of undercounts are happening, because one continuum of care might have a different way of tallying or surveying than another. And then also there's a lot of critique about how they go about giving continuum of cares information based on the last point in time count to actually act on. Mm-hmm. So a recent, I think it was 2021 or 2020, study by the Office of Government Accountability basically laid all this out and said, HUD, like, these are things that you need to fix. And HUD actually agreed to those and said, we're going to try to fix them. Now it's kind of a question if those things will actually happen,
yeah.
with everything that's going on at the federal government level right now.
Did you get any sense as to why things have not changed, why they've stayed sort of this in the current state it's in, especially if folks across the country are saying, like, this is not working?
Well, I think, both the other guests can agree that homelessness is a really complex issue. Mm-hmm. Everything that I've covered since I started at Midwest Newsroom that involves homelessness is that it's very complex and hard to solve. Mm-hmm. And these are things that, you know, I think that if, you know, if HUD had all the infinite funds and energy and staffing, they would I think by their own admission would try to change things to make it a little more easier to work. But you know, for the time being, I think you see continuums of care like here in St. Louis and out in Callaway and throughout Missouri doing what they can to make their process work best, mm-hmm. so they can get the count right as best they can.
And on that count note, the numbers do show that homelessness is increasing. Talk with us about those numbers, Kayvon, and how Missouri's numbers compare with other states across the country.
Sure, yeah. Missouri, important to note, is in our the Midwest Newsroom's four-state region, the largest of the four states. And there, I think, are about roughly about 7,300-ish homeless individuals that were counted in the last PIT count. That's compared to, say, like Iowa, where there's about 2,600. And in Nebraska and Kansas, our other two states, similar numbers, 2,600, 2,700. And just keep that in mind that nationwide, there's something around 770,000 homeless individuals. Mm-hmm. So break that up. And a good way to kind of Missouri has about 7,300. Illinois has 25,800 estimated homeless individuals. So, like, state by state, it can really vary. In the four-state region the Midwest Newsroom covers, you know, Missouri is the largest. But if you look at California, Illinois, states, you know, coastal states especially, you're mm-hmm. going to see a much higher number based on the population
yeah.
as well.
Those numbers that Kayvon has shared, Adam, to what extent are you seeing that reflected in what you are, you know, what you're doing, what you're seeing in the city of St. Louis?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think just anecdotally, a lot of us are seeing more individuals who may be unhoused. Perhaps we are seeing more encampments or more people gathered at certain parks or just outside on the streets. I would say, you know, going through this past winter, we have definitely experienced that. I would say that the city of St. Louis, the continuum of care, several different volunteer outreach groups have worked very closely together to facilitate pop-up shelters, you know, on the coldest of nights. And a lot of what we've seen is that even with all of the emergency and new beds that were added, we still have more people to serve, right? And there are some individuals who never really make it to the point of receiving outreach services because they might be in abandoned buildings or somewhere where we typically don't go. Mm-hmm. And so we do see, just anecdotally, we see more people face-to-face. We are seeing more folks who are struggling with being unhoused. And I think, you know, the driver of that is the lack of affordable housing. And yep. certainly, you know, cost of living increases. And so people are struggling.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is clearly much more that we can talk about when it comes to this. We appreciate the insights that each of you have brought. Adam Pearson is director of the Department of Human Services for the City of St. Louis. April Redman is regional coordinator for the Missouri Balance of State Continuum of Care and a leader at Callaway Cares in Fulton. And Kayvon Mansouri is investigative reporter for the Midwest Newsroom. Kayvon, April, and Adam, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
This episode was produced by Jada Jones.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.